time to thrive. Welcome to the Thriveology Podcast with Dr. Lee Bockham. Join us as we explore ways that you can thrive in your life, regardless of what life throws at you. It's your life. Time to live it.
Hey, this is Lee Bockham. Welcome to the Thriveology Podcast. I am a full-time thriveologist and a part-time thriver, which means that I'm always studying how to thrive better and always struggling to be a better thriver. And if you follow me much at all, you know that struggling is part of thriving in my mind. Sometimes we have this idea that the people who are thriving are the ones who are on easy street just sliding through. But in my estimation, if people aren't struggling, if they don't have something they're striving for, something that is challenging them, something that's causing them to learn, they've stopped growing. And when you stop growing, you stop thriving. So we're here to talk about how to thrive better. If you read my last blog post, you know that over this last week, we lost my dear, sweet, big yellow lab. Sonny had been with us for 8 years, and this is actually the first time in quite a while that I'm recording without him by my side. You may have even in previous podcasts heard him snoring in the background, curled up beside me. And so this has been a bit of a time of adjustment for me. And so I wrote that podcast just as kind of letting people know what had happened and hoping to think a little bit about grief. Well, evidently I touched a bit of a nerve because I heard from lots of people and many people. I want to thank you first for sending me your condolences, and lots of people related to that loss of having lost some pet in their background that they were attached to, and I do appreciate those thoughts. Some people were also just commenting about grief, and lots of people were expressing their own places of grief and hurt. And so what I realized was that while one of my longtime study expertises is grief, I didn't talk about that. I haven't talked about that in these Thriveology podcasts. So I want to talk about that today. I think that grief is one of those misunderstood pieces of our emotional existence that we all, I mean, this is the great equalizer. We all are going to go through those losses. We all are going to go through those points of grief in our life. And so we all live it, and yet we all rarely talk about it. And we misunderstand it so much. We, you know, a lot of times people confuse depression with lots of other things and also confuse the process of healing. So I want to talk some about that. You know, one of the big myths about the fact that people are in grief is that people think that they're depressed. And there is a difference between grief and depression. Although they can feel the same emotionally at times, one of the things that's a clear distinction is that when somebody is in the midst of grief, there's a situational sadness to it. In other words, they're sad about something. Some loss of something. It's not a generalized grief and a generalized sadness that is true with depression. It's a situational sadness. And so one of the clear distinctions I like people to make is that whether, you know, it feels like depression, if it's about a loss, it's really about grief. Another myth we have is that there's some certain path that people have to go on in order to deal with their grief. And I'm going to talk about that in just a few minutes, that's just a falsehood, that, you know, people have their own way of processing their grief, and we all find ways of how we move through that. Another myth that we have is that grief is going to crush us. And I really think this is the one where we build it up in our head because sometimes it hurts so much. We just feel like we can't go on. And I've heard people make the comment, you know, they're talking about somebody who's had just major losses and they say, I just don't know how they keep going. And my response is, what's the alternative? You know, that's what you do in life is you keep going, because throughout life, we're going to lose pieces of our loved life, whether it's friends or family, whether it's pets or jobs, whether it's capabilities in our own life, whether it's our own health. We are going to have losses. There's no way around it. Losses just keep coming. And I really think that when we think about those losses, there really are three types of grief that we want to think about. It's the three types of grief that are the three C types of grief. So let's just talk about those real briefly. The first one is clean grief. And clean grief is when, you know, it's clearly time and there's not a lot of emotional baggage to it. Relationships are clear with that person or that incident. For instance, sometimes somebody gets just kind of to the end of life. They've lived a long life. They've lived a great life and they die. And so you can't say, wow, that was out of time. That was the wrong timing. And you could say, wow, they lived a great life. You know, and perhaps it always helps when the relationship with them is a clean relationship, meaning that you've been able to say goodbye or that you've been able to resolve the conflicts. And so there is that place of clean grief. Now, unfortunately, the places where we can really say that's clean grief tend to be the rarities. What's more often are the confusing or the complicated grief. Confusing grief is sometimes it's we're not sure why something happened. You know, we're not sure why there was that loss, why it had to have happened. And so we're surprised by it. You know, somebody dies at the wrong time in life. Maybe you think they're too young, or they're in their prime of their life, or the illness came suddenly, or it was by tragic incidents, or something like that. Those make us confused about why these things happen. If it's more of a loss like a job, you know, you had this job, you thought it was great, you walk in and you find out the company is closing. That's a confusing loss. Or a spouse comes in and you think you're having a pretty decent marriage, and suddenly they say, "I'm out of here," and off the marriage goes. And so those are more confusing because it's hard to make sense of that. And so then there are also those confusing times because the grief event is attached to some good things. And so it gets us kind of confused. Like, for instance, when a child is going on to a new stage of life, you know, a child is going to school. And so they're that first time at school and you realize that they're kind of becoming less dependent on mom and dad. And there can be some grief attached to that. And yet we're watching that child grow up, right? Or they leave for college and you know that child is just ready to go to college and is bursting forth into a new life, and yet it's changing your life. That's a confusing grief because it has two things happening at one time. You know, there's the good side of it, and then there's the grief side. There's the gain side and the loss side. And often the gain side is somebody else, and the loss side is what we're experiencing. So we want to celebrate with them, and yet we're feeling the impact of that grief for ourselves. And so that can lead to a confusing grief. It kind of captures us in this strange place of not knowing which way to move. And then there are the more complicated ones. The complicated grief is that when there maybe are some unresolved pieces to the relationship or some unresolved reasons that something happened. For instance, you don't know why you lost your job. You walked in and they fired you and you can't get answers. That can make it very complicated. And sometimes we get stuck in that grief because we can't resolve it. We can't resolve that stage. We can't resolve the relationship anymore, or at least we don't feel like we can because we no longer have access to that. We might not have access to the person, you know, if they've died and we had a very conflicted relationship with them, or perhaps the last encounter you had with somebody before they died was an argument and you live with that memory. All those can leave us in complicated grief. And unfortunately, many griefs in our life are those confusing or complicated. And so what we're trying to do is take those confusing and complicated and kind of clean them up and move ourselves to a new place of grief where the grief becomes less complicated and less confusing and more clean. But those are the three grief types that I think we can use to classify what we're going through. Was it a clean grief that, you know, you knew it was time? And let's take even not just a loss, but let's say a job. You know, you knew that job. I think back on a job when I was in graduate school, and I loved the job, but it was time to leave. You know, it just was time to leave. And so when I got to that place, I knew I had to transition out of it, and yet I was left with the loss of that job. So, you know, those kinds of things, we have to figure out a way to walk through and get beyond them and kind of clean them up a little bit. And so those are the typical kinds of griefs that we go through, the clean, the confusing, or the complicated. So, you know, we're in a world that doesn't like much to talk about loss, certainly don't like to talk about death and dying. We've done a better job of it in recent decades. I remember when I was a boy back in the 70s, my father did a D-Min. He's a pastor, was a pastor, he's a retired pastor, and he did his D-Min, and his project for his doctor of ministry was about grief. And at that point, he was talking about and holding workshops in churches that had not had any training in grief because nobody talked about it. And all of a sudden, all these books were coming out at that point about how we live in a society of denial of death. You may be familiar with the famous work by Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who talked about the stages of grief. And so we have this new way of talking about it. And yet, as I watch it, we've in some ways Americanized death and dying. We've even taken this information that helped people through grief and kind of complicated even that information. For instance, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross said that there were five stages of grief. If you're familiar with that work, she said that these stages of grief are denial, then bargaining, then anger, then depression, and then acceptance. And what she talked about are these are the stages that people could go through as they're processing grief. And so what we then created from that was that this is how you do grief. This is the process. So the first thing that's going to happen is you're going to be in denial, and then you're going to bargain about it, and then you're going to be angry about it, get depressed about it, and finally you're going to get to acceptance. And that's how everybody's going to go through every grief. Well, there are a couple of things that we have missed in that process. First, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross was talking about the process of what happens when somebody finds out that they are dying, that it's not the people who are being left. It's not the grievers. It's the person who's grieving for themselves that they're going to die. And so, first of all, we've taken a concept that she created for somebody who was going through death themselves and broaden it to everybody. And then we've taken it as if those stages are kind of a map that you have to get the person through the next stage. And I grew up in my clinical training in a time when we believed that we had to get through everybody through denial, that everybody had to get through that. And so when I worked in the hospital, one of the common things was to really tear down the denial mechanisms of patients who were trying to do the best they could to cope with something. And so we would rip away their denial and make them understand that there was no chance that they were going to survive. And what we ended up with was very depressed people who had no hope. And this was never what Elizabeth Kubler-Ross meant. She more talked about these stages as the faces of grief, the ways that somebody might experience. So whenever you hear stages of grief, I would really love for you to hear the faces of grief, the way that grief might be displayed. And it's possible that somebody is going to go through all of those in A, B, C, D, E order. But more likely, you can see people who are stuck in the denial stage or the bargaining stage or the anger stage or the depression stage or the acceptance stage. And there are plenty of people who never get to acceptance. And that was never the intention of Elizabeth Kubler-Ross to say that everybody was going to get there and that was a necessary thing. It's obviously a place that may be helpful for some people, but it's not a mandatory. It was Kubler-Ross was giving a description of the way that grief looks. And so unfortunately what's happened is what Kubler-Ross wanted to be a descriptive piece of information has become a prescriptive, that we want people to be pushed through these different stages. And you know, as all humans, we just don't play by the same rules. And so part of what we've done is we've kind of Americanized it, westernized it, and said, okay, these are now the steps. It's not the stages, it's not the faces, but these are the steps you go through whenever you go through grief. And so that begins to put a lot of pressure on people to move through them. And instead of it being a helpful idea of what happens, of being able to say, wow, that's me in this bargaining stage, or that's me in this depressive stage, or that's me in this anger stage, or wow, I've gotten to this point of acceptance, we've made it to how do we push people to the next stage? How do we push them on the ladder to accepting their grief, their loss? And so one, it's not even designed for people who are grieving a loss. It's for those who are grieving their eventual death. And two, it was never designed to be the stages 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 as much as the faces, the description of what happens. So what is it that we grieve? I think that there are four different things that we can find ourselves grieving. We can always have that grief activated when there's a loss of person. And by that, I don't just mean an individual. It could be for us, for instance, for us, a pet, but there of a person, of a being. When there's a loss of that, and it could be by death, it could be because that person has moved across the country, it could be because that person divorces. There are lots of reasons you might lose that person, that creature, that being. And so we have that loss that's activated and probably in certain ways in very acute feelings when there's a loss of person. But there's also the grief that's around the loss of potential. And this can be around, for instance, if there is perhaps an accident that means that down the road, the person is not going to be capable of the things they were capable before. You know, if there's a head injury and suddenly there are memory issues and some difficulties in processing, that's a loss of potential that can be felt. Or, for instance, for people who have a child with a disability, you know, they grieve the loss of potential of that child. Not that that child is not with them and not that that child can't be great blessings, but there's still that loss of potential that we all have in fantasy world of what a child could be. And so we grieve that loss of potential, whether it's our own potential or somebody that's close to us. We can also grieve the loss of process. And loss of process may be that we suddenly can't do what we've been doing. And a lot of times you see this with people who are getting to the point where life is making it more difficult to do everyday activities. And this could be somebody who's just used to being able to work out every single day and suddenly can't do that. Their body begins to react to aging. It could be somebody who is used to being able to take care of themselves and finds out they can't do that, and so their process of life gets disruptive. Or somebody who loses a job and the process they have of self-involvement and self-knowledge and of identity begins to be threatened because the process that they're used to is gone. We are so caught up as people of being in routines. And I found this to be so true, you know, these past few days of rewiring my day of what the process is like when I've been living almost 24 hours a day with a dog by my side. And so in the morning I would get up and feed him and we would go for a walk. Well, I don't feed him now, and now I go for a walk. It's a very different walk. And when I walk in the door, he's not bounding towards me, and I'm not giving him a treat and trying to teach him some lessons along the process of day. And so that's a loss of process, along with the loss of person, that we have this loss of ritual. And so a lot of times what we find is that grief is really an activation of multiple losses, or there's the loss of possibility. And a lot of times possibility is what we lose when somebody dies and leaves us in a complicated situation. For instance, let's say somebody loses a loved one and that loved one has been cut off from them, that there's some conflict that has left them not talking with each other, and then this person dies. And no longer is there the possibility of reestablishing that relationship. No longer is there the chance of reestablishing connection with that person. And so there is the loss of the person, but there's also the loss of possibility of getting to a better place, of getting to a new relationship. And so not only is the grief a loss of that person, but it's a loss of the possibility of having a better relationship. So grief is not just about one little element. But we can have that loss around any of those four, and a combination of those four pieces of person, potential, process, and possibility. And sometimes we're so confused that we think that we shouldn't grieve the loss of a process or a possibility or even a potential. And yet that's what catches our grief. So when we're stuck in that grief, one of the things that I'm so aware of is how grief is such an individual thing and yet such an universal feeling, that we all are going to have moments of grief. And yet when we feel it, it's we're as if an island, as if feeling like we're alone in that. Back when I was about 12 years old, my dear grandfather died. It was my first loss, serious loss of a family member, and he was my beloved grandfather. And I remember many times staying at his house in the summer. I would stay with my grandmother, my grandfather on both sides for a week. And so I would stay at his house, and he always had these life lessons, and he would give me a little talk. And for the last little bit of part of his life, he raised pigeons in the back. And so we would go back and he would feed the pigeons and we would sit and watch them. And he would always have some lesson to tell me, some story. And he always started off with Sonny. And interestingly, it's what ended up being my dog's name. But Sonny, he would call me and he would tell me about life. And so when my grandfather died, it was a substantial loss for me of somebody that I loved, somebody who had given me attention and strokes and somebody who I felt like had lived such a wonderful life. And I remember the day of the funeral. We had all gathered, and as we were driving in the car, the town car that was taking my family, as we were driving along, I was looking out, and it was a beautiful sunny day, and where he lived was a very warm part of the country, and so it was a hot sunny spring day. And as we're driving along, I'm looking out my window at all the people who didn't seem to realize what a loss had happened. And in some ways, I couldn't believe that they wouldn't be aware of how painful this was for me and for my family, and that they somehow were left out of responding to my grief. And what I realized in that moment, even as a 12-year-old, was that grief was my grief, not their grief. And my grief was one that was just about my family and our particular loss. But there was another lesson I took from that, and that was that life goes on. And that grief is what captures us for a time being, and yet life goes on. We get up the next day, and the sun comes up, and we'll go do our things, and we'll reset life, and life will move forward. And we all go through that grief point, and sometimes it feels like we're not going to be able to go on. So there are some pieces to how we can move through that grief. And this is not how do you run away from the grief. Because what I've learned from my many years of dealing with grief and dealing with people in grief is that you can't make grief go away. You can slow down the process. You can get stuck in grief, but you can't speed grief up. Grief takes the time that grief takes. And so as we're moving through grief, I think that there are four different R's that you want to remember on how to move through that. In fact, the first one is to remember. And so part of moving through grief is to remember with gratitude, looking for gratitude of how that loss was in your life, whether that loss was a person, a pet, a potential, a process, a possibility, whatever it was, to remember and really focus on not perhaps the last days of conflict or the last days of pain. You know, if it's the loss of a job, the last days of that difficulty, or the last days of an illness for a person, but to remember the fuller scope, to remember the greater days, the good days. Today, I went for a trail run. Several years back, I had to stop running with my dog, but before he had been my constant trail running companion. And so part of my process of moving through this was to go for a run on a trail that he and I ran very often and remember the sight of that dog bounding along beside me and running ahead of me and running back to try to speed me up and to push me on to finish that course. And so I remembered how fun it was to be with him. And I remembered how gleeful he was and how happy he was to be running in the woods as a way of thinking back in gratitude of having had a chance to watch this dog in pure joy running down a trail. That for me was a process of remembering. When I think back on the family members that I've lost, I think back on the blessings they were in my life as a way of bringing back gratitude. Now, if this is a complicated grief for people, sometimes you have to work through that and remember with gratitude and then begin to work on forgiveness, of letting go, of moving beyond it. And so the next stage is actually resolving. Sometimes we have some things to resolve that we can't get through. And so one of the ways that I've recommended people do that is to write a letter to the event, to the person, to whatever, to do what you can to complete the incompletes, to complete the broken spots. You resolve things by having an internal dialogue about that, and I find that there is a process that is very helpful in actually writing it down. Now, not everybody is going to key in on this, but if you have lost somebody and you find it to be a very complicated place, let me suggest you write a letter to them and address those places of incompleteness to bring a resolution to those places. You don't have to ever mail the letter or have anybody else see it. In fact, one way some people find some resolution is to write that letter, let it sit for a few days, and then burn the letter so that it doesn't have to be seen, but it allows you to have an internal conversation as if that person is a part of the process and you're letting go. You're finding some ways of resolving the hurt, resolving the difficulties, and moving forward. Because one of the things that locks us back from moving forward, that keeps us from moving forward with life and with abundance, is we have those unresolved places. Now, that asks a lot of people because sometimes we don't want to let go of those hurts. Sometimes we don't want to move forward with that. And all that does is keep us stuck. So let me just suggest that if you find yourself stuck in a relationship, and whether it's the person has died or the person has cut themselves off from you, or you know it's a boss that you're upset about the loss of a job, or it's an accident that happened, you can even address it to that part of you, that possibility, that potential that you lost, and begin to resolve those stuck points just in conversational letter writing. And what I suggest is you just sit down and write the letters that comes to you. And it may take a few times to sit down and write it out. But do what you can to complete your part of that disconnect so that you can remember what was there with gratitude. You can remember what that person was or what that job was or what that process was or potential was with gratitude for what was there. And the next stage is to recreate, to recreate, to recreate. And by recreate, I mean to go and begin to live life again. That one of the big losses of grief is sometimes we lock ourselves in the grief and we stop living. And so not only is there that loss, but we give up something else of ourselves. We get frozen into that spot and we find ourselves unable to move forward. So to recreate, which if you pull it out, is recreate, and sometimes having a good time and exercising and moving around and doing something enjoyable moves us to that place, but to recreate new habits and new processes. As we have losses, one of the pieces that we lose are those habits that were attached to that person. That if the person has been a constant in our life, you know, even if it's maybe a loved one that you talk to on the phone every Sunday night for years and years, that creates a new habit as that person is no longer there. So we find ways of rebuilding that, of rebuilding our lives. And for me, part of the way we ritualize the end of somebody's life, of celebrating, for instance, with a funeral or other ceremony, what we're doing is finding ways of creating a new space, a new ritual where that person is not there, but is still remembered. And so we create new habits. On the evening that my dog died, last Friday, I did what I always do. I took a walk. My wife and I took a walk, and her suggestion was maybe we should walk somewhere else, and she was trying to make sure that I was going to be okay. But I wanted to walk in our neighborhood because I didn't want to always have to run from that experience. I wanted to be able to walk in our neighborhood and enjoy that and know that I was reweaving a new habit, finding a new way of being in the place that had been a walk with a dog. And so as I move through the day, I find new ways of reweaving and creating new habits, not because I don't want to remember Sonny, but because I know that my life goes on. And that there are new processes that need to come online. And sometimes that's true when there's a loved one that we lose that's very close to us, a spouse or a child or a parent, that we've been instrumental and in many ways in great contact with through the day, that we have to create new habits of how that's going to happen. You know, I've talked with people who stopped eating lunch because they shared lunch with that loved one. And with the loved one not there, they didn't know what to do. Instead of finding a new habit of how to have that lunch, they just gave up the habit. Now, interestingly, They'd created a new habit. Not having lunch had become the new habit, not a healthy habit, but a new habit. And so no matter what happens, we recreate. And I'm just suggesting that there are some conscious ways we can choose to find new habits, new processes, new ways of moving through life without that person, which leaves us to the last R, the reweave. We reweave our lives and create new connections and new possibilities. There's no replacing that loss. There's no replacing the person that might have left or died. There's no replacing that job that might have ended. And there's no reason to replace it, but to reweave our life and to create new connections and possibilities with other places. You know, it's interesting for me to watch how many times people want to move somebody through grief, and so they suggest kind of a quick answer. And so over the past few days, people said, oh, why don't you get a new dog? And my response is that you don't get a new dog because it's not going to be a Sunny. There's no replacement of that. But I will get a new dog at some point, not to replace Sunny, but to have another dog to love on and to have another dog to be with. And it's the same whether it's a pet or a job or a loved one. All of them are places of reweaving, finding new places of being. And I watched after my grandfather died, my grandmother reweave her life and create new connections. And she got into groups, small groups, and created book groups and found other places of connection in the community, not to replace her husband, but to reweave her life into a new place. Whenever there's a loss, there's a time and a potential for us to reweave life and make it a new place, make it a new pattern. That doesn't mean that it gets rid of the grief, but it allows us to reclaim our lives, to move forward with new possibilities, to build a new place. Now, here's the thing. Life is terminal, but love is not terminal. Love goes on. So life is terminal in the sense that we will go on with our lives, but there's going to be another loss. And it's not a betrayal of our loss or our loved ones to go on and claim a new life. It's about living. It's about claiming that place of struggle in our life to find a new way of being. We can't live among the dead. We can't live amongst our loss. It will just keep us trapped. We can't be stuck in our loss, but we have to live a life. We have to find a way of growing into that. Some people decide after a loss that they're never going to open themselves again to love. They're never going to open themselves again to possibility. And in that moment, they've given up a little bit of their own lives. They've already lost one piece, and now they're going to give up another piece. The fact is, life is terminal. There's no way around it. So we want to, instead of getting stuck into that, breathe into it and begin to find a new life, a new possibility, a new way of living that honors those who have gone on before us and honors the losses we've had in our lives, but allows us to rebuild, to recreate, to reweave life. The hurt may not go away very quickly. My grandmother told me every year I saw her that she missed her husband every single day. Sometimes she even pulled out his pipe and smoked it. One of the things that I grew up with was him smoking his pipe and that smell of tobacco. And she missed him, and that reminded her of him. But she rebuilt her life. She recreated her life around her and continued to have a thriving life for 3 decades after he died. And while she never got over his death in the sense that she never forgot him, she did get beyond the loss, and she did rebuild her life, and she found a way to move through her grief to a place of new possibility, to a place of new birth, of new being, in the sense that she was able to find a new way of being in her life. Hopefully that's been helpful for you, because we all have this to deal with in life. We all have those points of loss and grief, and so if we find better ways of moving through them, we have the great potential of continuing to thrive even in the midst of living life on the fact that it's going to be about loss. If you've experienced a grief, I wish you the best, and I want to pull you to think about how you can move beyond the grief. Not get rid of the grief, but move beyond the grief. Move through it. Remember, resolve, recreate, and reweave your life so that you can find new ways of being. If you haven't experienced that loss, be ready for that when it comes, to recognize that there can be great gratitude in the midst of grief. And while it can look like depression or it can look like anger, those are faces of the emotion of grief. And the biggest thing we can do is embrace life by recognizing there's going to be loss. But if we don't lose, we haven't lived enough and we haven't loved enough. And the task of life is to live fully and to love fully. This is Lee Balcom wishing you the best for a thriving life.
Listening to the Thriveology Podcast. Thank you for listening. If you want more information, visit us at Thriveology.com or at ThriveologyMagazine.com. Remember that Thriveology is spelled T-H-R-I-V-E-O-L-O-G-Y. It's your life. Time to live it.